talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And Michelle is back. Michelle was gone last weekend. Where were you? In like Branson, weren't you?
And recovered from my trip to the Oscars.
Oh, the Oscars. That's right. You were covering the Oscars. That was fun when you called in.
That was.
But we're not going to cover the Oscars today.
In fact, no award season
Oscar
is
talk.
Over.
No awards talk for months. Oh, I'm so tired of talking about awards. Of course, Cannes and Venice and Toronto and all these things will happen in, what, 3 or 4 months? So.
Right, in May.
May, okay,
Cannes
in 3 months. So we can talk then. So 3 months of no awards talk. And did you listen to the show last week, Michelle?
I did.
Lynn Benow.
I listened to it twice.
Did you hear?
She was wonderful.
She's always good. But I did a terrible job with the top 10.
I
started with number 7. I just had no idea what I was doing. You were so good at the top 10, and it's trickier than it looks. Or the top 12, as we like to say.
So you know what a genius Casey Kasem was.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's where my news background
Okay, so let's talk about the top 12 at the box office. I believe Disney had a winner. Let's hear about it, Michelle.
I love that movie, Zootopia. I think that's such a darling movie.
Well, we predicted that last week, didn't we?
Exactly.
I think Lynn and I did said it was going to topple Deadpool.
But you predicted London Has Fallen would not topple Deadpool, and it did.
I was surprised at that.
Okay, go ahead, Michelle. Number one.
Number one was Disney's Zootopia, $73.7 million. Disney's animation studios film enjoyed an impressive $137 million global weekend and the best ever North American debut for a Disney animation title. The film now boasts a global total of $232.5
million. Okay, I reviewed it. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
It's just like a throwback to old Disney.
It'll be in profit mode here in the next couple of days, I imagine.
Which took some of the profits away from number two, Focus Features, London Has Fallen.
I'm surprised it did that well.
The R-rated film came in at $21.7 million.
Pretty
impressive, though, still.
Yeah, I mean, for a sequel to a film that's almost 3 years old. And
exactly.
A lot of people confuse it with the other White House movies. So.
Which was far better. The original Olympus Has Fallen opened 3 years ago to $30 million. The film this weekend opened at 3,400 locations.
I think when it opened, the first one opened like closer to May or April or something like that. So that's pretty good for early March, I guess.
I mean, who doesn't like watching Gerard Butler walk around the screen for 2 hours? But, at number three, 20th Century Fox's Deadpool, still hanging in there, was $16.4 million. The Ryan Reynolds R-rated superhero movie has brought in $311 million domestically and $673 million worldwide.
So it's for certain the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
Exactly.
Now, right?
The records that it's broken, February and March.
What's the highest grossing X-rated movie?
You think it wouldn't be Midnight Cowboy, would it?
Probably not.
Yeah. I'll have to look
probably Deep Throat.
Or Debbie Does Dallas or something like that.
Yeah. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot from Paramount Pictures was number 4 with $7.6 million. Unfortunately, this was way below expected was one of the...
People expected people to go out and see that movie?
Paramount was thinking a little...
They were thinking a little more, really?
They were thinking a little more.
I think 4 is respectable for that. Yeah.
$7.6 million, I was hoping like maybe 10.
That 10 is pretty poor. Yeah.
This was one of the lowest openings for Tina Fey.
Had a lot trailer.
We'll talk about it a little bit. The trailer's deceptive. We'll talk, I guess, a little more about that later.
Yeah, it's really a good movie. Number 5 was Gods of Egypt from
Lionsgate. I saw Gods of Egypt.
Oh, my goodness. No. You're here to tell the tale.
I'm just kidding. I didn't see that.
Gerard Butler after that one.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I keep forgetting he's in both movies. The film opened $5 million here in the U.S. and globally now stands at $72.1 million. Mm. The $140 million film was supposed to be the beginning of a franchise.
Oh, really? Oh, you dreamers.
Well, Lionsgate, look at all the franchises that are finished for them. Yeah. I mean, Divergent's coming to a close. Hunger Games is finished. So
they're based on established young adult novels.
This is true.
Very successful. This is kind of an original deal.
Number 6 was Risen, the Christian-based film, opened at $3.9 million. Number 7 was Kung Fu Panda 3, still doing really well, breaking box office records throughout the world. That came in at $3.5 million. 20th Century Fox's The Revenant came in at number 8 with $3.3 million. Globally, the global total for one of the Oscar-winning films from last weekend now stands at $428
million. That's impressive.
I still can't get over that number.
Yeah.
Ugh. The charming, adorable Eddie the Eagle comes in at number 9 with $3.1
million. So charming and adorable.
Oh, I can't say enough nice things about this film. The film about Olympian Eddie Edwards, who represented Team Great Britain, has now a total of $10.8
million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like it's a modestly budgeted film, so it'll probably turn a little bit, or at least make its money back.
Yeah, and I think it'll have some legs with video on demand and DVD sales, Redbox, all that.
Certainly doing better than the other Olympic film. Races, I guess, off the top 12.
That's awful. So at number 10 is the horror film The Witch. That came in at $2.5 million. Open Roads 999.
Also charming and adorable.
No. Came in at number 11, $2.1 million.
That's a pretty big drop, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And that's a really good film, too. So at number 12, rounding out the 12, was How to Be Single for Warner Brothers Pictures with $2.1
million. Okay, so next weekend, Zootopia will probably be in number 1 again.
Right. Also notable is the debut of China's film IP Man 3, which you reviewed, Jim.
Has
an incredible $75 million this weekend with just three territories. That's huge.
I wonder if it's playing anywhere still in the States. I imagine maybe in New York or LA or something like that.
Oscar winner Spotlight, Best Picture winner, took in $1.8 million. The film's total now stands at $41.6 million during its theatrical run.
Would have made more if it had Mike Tyson in it.
Next weekend's opening include 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Young Messiah, and Knights of Cups.
Oh, Young Messiah opens Friday?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not showing that to us?
I guess not.
But they're showing us Heaven's Miracles from Heaven.
Yeah,
that's a little bit bigger.
Which looks really lousy.
Well, I wonder how that, I would have thought that Chinese film, I think it's The Mermaid, I've heard it's been doing fairly
that's
well.
Also,
it's playing a couple of theaters
Variety
here in town.
Variety said it had like a huge opening weekend.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that's not in the top 12, but yeah, so they are showing Miracles, but not Young Messiah to us. Okay. That's interesting.
Well, I will be reviewing Miracles from Heaven, I think. It opens on a Wednesday.
You're going to take the bullet.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get started. We got a bunch of movies to review. Let's start with Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
This is an extreme environment.
Down.
People with actual experience make bad decisions here.
This is an orange rook.
The girl at the North Face store said it was military grade.
Well, where are you going to hide it? Inside a fucking sunset?
Why have I never heard of you? I haven't done a lot of overseas reporting.
Many are voting for the first time. That's my ass. Do you have a mother?
Which Jim and Michelle have seen, but I have not. Jim, did you review it? No,
Kate reviewed it. She gave it four out of five,
so she really liked it.
I had to agree with that.
Did you like it as much as Kate did, Jim?
Maybe not quite as much, but I think it is pretty strong. I think we referred to the trailer a little while ago as being sort of deceptive. They're selling it as a wacky, zany, frolicking comedy, and it's really not. It does have those humorous moments, but a lot of it is very serious. It's about the war in Afghanistan. I think it starts about 2003, something like that, when a lot of the reporters, the on-air reporters, were being pulled from Afghanistan to Iraq with the Iraq invasion happening then. And so there's an opportunity allotted to people that generally don't get a lot of airtime. And Tina Fey plays Kim Baker, who's based on the real life Kim Barker. Who wrote the book that it's based on, and she jumps at the chance, but her boyfriend Josh Charles, who's played by Josh Charles, isn't too keen on it. But then you see in the trailer he seems to get past that a little later on. And the gist of the film, a lot of it is about Kim becoming sort of an adrenaline junkie and taking these outrageous chances. There's a sequence in which the troops that she's embedded with but come under fire, and instead of hitting the floor or getting back in the Humvee, she's on their shoulders, you know, and it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And of course, this raises the anger of the general. That's sort of her supervisor, played by Billy Bob Thornton, in a very delightful performance.
Isn't
much
it?
much better than his role in that he had in Arbenz's Crisis, which this film kind of reminds you of a little bit, but it's a better film than Brandon's Crisis, that's mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. What's really strong in it is her relationships with a couple of other reporters. One is this blonde, hard-hitting photojournalist played by Margot Robbie. I think her name is Tanya in it. She's very good at, you know, she's very aggressive, and in the trailer she's the one that tells Tina that she's actually a 9, where in Kabul, where she would be a 5 or 6 in New York City. And she said, well, that must make you a 15 here. And so, well, yeah. But what's even better is the off-again, on-again romance, the flirtation between her and Martin Freeman, the great Martin Freeman from the Hobbit films, as a Scottish photojournalist. That's the best part of the film, I think.
I think so, too. I couldn't get enough of Martin Freeman in this film, especially to see him out of, you know, the Sherlock Holmes series, out of the Hobbit. So I love seeing Martin Freeman in this. I think that was a really big plus for the film.
Yeah, they'd make a great screen teaming. I hope they team them up again in
another
film.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Nice.
What about Morgan Freeman? Is he in it?
No, he's in another film.
I should also
single out a young actor I wasn't aware of, Christopher Abbott, who plays their interpreter. He's very good, Fahim.
The relationship between him and Faye?
Very deadpan role.
So it sounds like you liked it too, Michelle.
I did. I really did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, Jim, how many stars would you have given?
Oh, I would give it probably 3.5, 3.75, something like that.
We don't do three. We don't do the quarter system.
Not anymore.
Kate did 4.
Yeah.
How many stars would you have given it, Michelle?
Oh, definitely 4.
Okay. So,
especially the last two paragraphs on her review focused a lot on Martin Freeman. So,
okay,
you know,
I
had to go with that.
All right. So, Michelle, Jim, and Kate all recommend Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Let's move on. Jim and I saw a movie last week called The Wave. The Wave was a movie about Norwegian movie, and it's been breaking box office records in Norway. And I did see it online. Oh, you've seen it
and
too.
Travis reviewed it.
Yeah, it's not about the little thing that they do in the stands during baseball games. It's not that.
I tried to do that in the theater, though, at the screening.
What a chilling movie, though.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining, I think. It is,
but it's really kind of it's about a tsunami and a rock slide, which causes a tsunami and a giant wave.
Yeah, what I love is they've got these like poles that are sort of bracing the crevices in between there, and you're like, you know, this looks like stuff you could pick up at Home Depot or something. They look precarious to start with.
And it's sort of told through the eyes of this family, the mom and the dad. The mom's working at a hotel, and the son is at the hotel with her, and the dad and the little girl who's maybe 12 are trying to get out of town by driving up to, I think it's 800 feet or something, out of the way of the wave.
Yeah, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Lethal Weapon films, in that the father is just about to retire from watching the crevices and take a higher paying job in the city, and it's like 2 days for retirement, and then all this happens. They pull me back in.
It's really cliched, and if this was an American movie, I think people would be making fun of it. I mean, the only two people that survive the hotel are the mother and the son.
Spoiler!
So they go down to the bomb shelter, and they're submerged in water, and there's like a foot where they can sort of swim to the top and breathe. And then the father, who's on the other side of town, somehow makes it to the hotel and somehow makes it down to the bomb shelter, and then he pops up and he's staring at his wife.
There's something interesting going on before that with another hotel guest that's kind of frightening.
Yeah,
who's you just completely losing it. And that's a pretty good sequence.
It's a good movie, actually. But I think it would get, if it had been an English film, a Hollywood film, it would have said, "Oh, what a cliched movie this is." But for some reason, since it's Norwegian, everybody's like, "Wow, this is really art."
It's almost it gives it some gravitas.
I was telling Michelle after I saw it that it reminded me a little bit of Jaws, because of course Christian, the father, is the first one to realize that something really bad is going on with the mountain, and his supervisor said, "Do you want me to push the panic button? You know, we're going to ruin all the tourism that's coming into town." I was like, "Oh, it's Amity Days."
And remind me, what was the one with Naomi Watts?
The Impossible. There was a lot of that.
Who was the actor who played Christian?
Did you catch his name? That was Christopher Joner.
You know, he was in The Revenant.
Oh, really?
He survived. I Googled him and I found a picture of him in the Revenant, and he's on the boat, so he survived the opening Indian attack, but he's, you know, shaggy haired and grizzled like everybody was in the Revenant. Man. So I don't know, it must have been a pretty small part. It's kind of a slightly odd casting. He doesn't look like a scientist. He looks like some stoner or something. But no, there's nothing wrong with the film. Travis gave it a pretty good review.
The family's pretty nice in it, and his coworkers are pretty neat. What's interesting is, of course, it's all in Norwegian, but occasionally they slip in some English phrases, usually the F-bomb. But there's one sequence where he's telling his coworker if he could go up to the crevice. He goes, "Yes, sorry, Bob."
That's right.
Something's wrong with that.
So I'd give it probably 3.5 out of 5 if I had reviewed it. I forget what Travis gave it, but he gave it a pretty positive review.
Same thing.
And you liked it too, Michelle?
I did. I really, the whole disaster genre, I'm so in for every time, so.
Very
much liked it.
And it's not, you know, it doesn't go too crazy with the CGI stuff, which I think an American remake probably would have done.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's a couple of really nice dramatic shots of the hotel being destroyed by that wave.
There's a scene where the people have pulled off the highway to get to higher ground, and they see the wave coming around the corner.
I love the CGI. The CGI is like, you know, it's really good.
It's low key, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we recommend The Wave. Jim, you saw Embrace of the Serpent at St. Louis International Film Festival. It opens this Friday
here in St. Louis at
one of the landmark theaters. Why don't you briefly talk a little bit about Embrace of the Serpent?
Well, Embrace the Serpent was my pick for one of the awards at SLIF of the 5 films that we reviewed. I think it just lost the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film to Son of Saul. Mm. I don't know. I find Embrace of the Serpent just as compelling. Hopefully, it'll be on one of the big screens. I guess it's going to be over
the front neck.
Well, it's going to be at one of the landmark theaters. I hope it deserves to be in the big screen because it's just so gorgeous. It's in glorious silver, black and white.
I think it looks more like a Frontenac movie than a Tivoli movie.
Oh, but yeah, you're missing a lot on the smaller screen with it. It is in black and white except for a sequence towards the end of it in which some hallucinogens kick in and we get some color footage. But it's all set in the Amazon. It is about a shaman who is the last of his tribe who is... I think his character name is Karmakate. It took me a while to realize what's going on, but I get that it's two actors playing the same character at different phases of his life. At one point, he's a younger man in 1906 meeting up with this German scientist who is in search of this healing plant, and he's sickly, and he's got someone leading him along the Amazon. And then later on, you realize that, we're seeing him 40 years later with another German scientist who is following the diary of this earlier fella, and they're all going up the Amazon and meeting these different tribes, and there's a sequence with a sort of an orphanage that's really, really one of the creepiest things I'd seen. You see what happens in 1906, and then you see the results of that 40 years later. It's very compelling. The photography is just gorgeous, and like I say, the black and white can be just as compelling and interesting as full Technicolor.
Oh, it's often more so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is it a violent film?
There's a lot of violence in it. It's not over the top bloody like what was it, The Green Inferno a few months ago? Is that the name of it? but nothing like that. It is told in German, but most of it is in Spanish. As I understand, it was a co-production between Colombia, Venezuela, and Argentina.
Okay.
I would recommend it. It's something for the adventurous film goer.
All right. Did you review it
in November? I gave a little review of it around SLIF time, and I guess I'll be expanding on that.
Okay, well, we'll repost your review of Embrace of the Serpent. Another movie that Jim saw that opens Friday at Landmark Theaters here in St. Louis is Terrence Malick's Knight of Cups.
Different these days. What's going on with you?
I can't remember a man I wanted to be.
Just don't threaten me with leaving, okay? Just do what you want to do.
You don't want love. You want a love experience.
Oops.
starring Christian Bale. Jim, what's this movie about?
Ah, that's a good question. Even after seeing it, I'm not 100% sure. From what I gather, it's about a disillusioned filmmaker played by Christian Bale. And it's him just kind of wandering around the Los Angeles area for a couple of hours. The camera is sort of in the center of the action. If you got to see Malick's last film, To the Wonder, it's very close to that. We could just kind of hear bits of dialogue and little snippets, and the camera is going around Bale and around what he's encountering. It's a lot of walking around. I could say he's a filmmaker. He's sort of got a strange relationship, an estrangement, I guess, with his younger brother, who's played by Wes Bentley in it. His father, who's played by Brian Dennehy, who we haven't seen in any films in a while.
Yeah.
I think he's mostly been doing stage work, a little TV here and there. And it's about his relationships to women. One woman that he meets up early on is played by Imogen Poots. I'm thinking she's some sort of working girl. I'm thinking later on he's involved with a stripper played by Teresa Palmer. This is her third film this year after The Choice and Triple Nine.
How are her stripping scenes?
Well, actually, her scenes in The Choice are a lot better. I will tell you that. Yeah, her swimsuit sequences.
Really?
But and Christian, I don't know if he's still married or if he's estranged also from his wife, and it played by Kate Blanchett, who is a surgeon. Christian also has an affair with a married woman played by Natalie Portman. So this is an incredible cast. There's an amazing sequence at this plush Hollywood estate, and it looks to be like a some sort of party, maybe a birthday party for an Antonio Banderas. And you're sitting there, and you're just like, oh, who's that? Is that? It's like Ryan O'Neal is in it.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, my goodness.
He is?
Yeah, yeah, in this sequence. And,
okay.
You know,
well, is this movie any good? Let's cut to the chase.
Boy, it goes on and on. And
sounds very Terrence Malick.
Yeah, but there's just very little point to it. Like I say, the little bits of dialogue thrown at you here and there. There's one sequence that's set above the earth where you're seeing the Northern Lights, and I had hoped that we'd get a cameo from the dinosaurs from Tree of Life, but we do not.
You did not.
We didn't get to see him this time out. I say, all of a sudden, for one sequence, he's in St. Louis. You see the arch. Just pops up. I don't know. It's kind of highfalutin, artsy, schmartsy navel gazing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's
kind
of a meandering mess.
Yeah. And you hear these film executives talking about deals and all that, and I guess it's Malick's comment about the commercialism of movie making and all
that's
that.
So Malick to have Terrence, these long lingering scenes.
Oh yeah,
I think Terrence Malick was more interesting when he was only making one movie a decade. He's gotten too prolific.
Yeah, this is like his maybe fourth or fifth and last. I've heard he's got two more on the pipeline here. But
are you reviewing it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com?
I don't know if I am or not.
No,
we'll
this
see.
Would be Michael Hefner.
Oh, Michael Hefner's
reviewing it. Oh, that's right. He saw it
already
right.
at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, okay.
How many
stars would you have given it had you had the opportunity to
give it? I would maybe give it two, maybe one and a half. It's just kind of pointless.
One and a half.
Oh, my
God.
All right, so Jim does not recommend Knight of Cups. What's this title come from?
There's a little bit of a monologue at the opening that's by Ben Kingsley, it's reading from some sort of book, and I guess it goes to his childhood, Christian Bale's childhood, to the stories that his dad told him then.
I see. Okay, so Jim doesn't really recommend Knight of Cups, but we saw London Has Fallen.
We have to fire Lakawe before he fires the president.
We're going to kill him slowly and broadcast it live.
Yeah, well, you should have brought more men.
I will not be executed as propaganda.
Which was number two at the box office, made almost $22 million. That stars Gerard Butler. Do we know remember the character he plays?
Mike Banning.
great character name.
It's like Grace Bannon.
And it's this sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, where he protected President, played by Aaron Eckhart, at the White House. This time they head over to London because the Prime Minister has mysteriously died in his sleep. So the heads of state of all these countries.
All the heads get together.
And, which I love that, because about an hour later, there's this kind of throwaway dialogue. They say, hey, it looks like the Prime Minister was poisoned after all. Like, gee, why didn't you figure that out before you sent the leaders of all these countries over to London to attend his funeral? Well, of course, There's like, what would you say, 300 swarthy Mideastern terrorists that pop up with machine guns and bombs and just start killing everybody left and right. You see the president of France murdered, the president of Italy murdered.
That's quite a scene.
Murdered.
Yeah, this is a funny bit that didn't occur to me when I was writing the review, but they take the time to identify everybody before knocking them off just seconds later. I was like, you had to go and, cast these people and give these sort of sound-like names to the real prime ministers, and then they're done.
It's a bit of a stretch.
It is one silly, goofy movie, but I had a heck of a lot of fun with it. I said the other night when we were watching it, it reminded me of some of the old Cannon films where you'd have a half a dozen or a dozen terrorists pop up behind cars, and Chuck Norris or Charles Bronson or Michael Dudikoff would mow them down like the Mark's Sure Shot shooting gallery. You know, it doesn't even try to be realistic, which I sort of, you know, it's stupid. It's a stupid movie, but I think it's stupidity sort of works in its favor.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a lot of fun, and it's a fun movie to make fun of. Like, for example, there's the safe house that the terrorists stay in. Where the heck are all these terrorists staying? Well, it looks like they might be staying in this building here, right in the middle of London. No, that building's unoccupied. And then there's a line, oh, but we just did a test, and electricity in this building has gone up 300% in the past month. Well, how about the 200 swarthy terrorists that have been going in and out of this building? Well, they had to have boxes and boxes of guns and bombs and things like that. Nobody noticed that.
And Aaron Eckhart returns as the president. It's got a great, I mean, look at the cast. It's got Melissa Leo, Robert Forster, Jackie Early Haley, Morgan Freeman.
All stuck in the crisis room talking
so
to each other.
They're underutilized.
Well, I know. I don't think, does Jackie Early Haley have more than one line?
At one point
he says, I can't watch.
I can't watch this.
They're going to execute the president on YouTube.
Rorschach,
and the whole world is sitting around watching it, and Jackie Early Haley turns around and, I can't watch this.
Angela Bassett returns for a brief.
Too brief.
I
think she could be a really great action hero, and she doesn't get anything to do in this.
I mean, but I still liked it.
Oh, I did too. I highly recommend it.
It was just too silly for me. I think that my main problem is they sort of shoot the works early on. They've got this big, almost disaster porn sequence with all the terrorists attacking at one time. We get to see London Bridge going down.
Yeah, and Big Ben blowing up.
And then afterwards, I guess they're shooting it in Bulgaria, so it's all at night, and they've sent out the air raid alarms to keep people inside, so you don't recognize or don't have to pay for extras on the street. And then it's all in dark tunnels and corridors, and they're fighting through smoke and all that, and you can't see what's going on for a third of the time.
Yeah, well, it's Gerard Butler. I have to give it a pass. So
he's barely controlling his Scottish brogue in some sequences.
I know, but that's what's so much fun about it.
I've got to protect you, President.
The special effects
are so terrible in this movie, too. There's all these, bird's eye view, probably drone shots of London, and then they CGI in these explosions that there's no smoke. They're just flashes of flames. There's this helicopter, the president is trying to escape London in this helicopter, and there's two other helicopters protecting him, and they sacrifice themselves, and when their helicopters get shot by a torpedo, they blow up in these giant fake fireballs. The president's helicopter gets shot by a torpedo, but it doesn't blow up. It crashes to the ground in this horribly unconvincing effect and doesn't even catch on fire because, of course, the president and Gerard Butler need to escape from this helicopter. And, of course, after that, they still have the strength to battle, 200 more terrorists for the next 90 minutes.
I wonder how it's going to play in England, like for the natives to watch London just be decimated.
I liked it. It was sort of, politically incorrect. I kind of enjoyed that.
I know, with
the Mideastern terrorists instead of generic Asian terrorists or something.
Yeah, I don't know. And the ending is kind of unsatisfying to me also.
Did you see Guy Lodge's Variety review?
I haven't read that.
He was calling it racist and just not.
Well, yeah, sure. Well, so was the first one, But the first one had to contend with the competing film, White House Down, which actually knew it was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
should have become the franchise.
Yeah, but it costs too much with those big stars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can afford Eckhart and Butler more than you can afford Tatum and Fox.
And Roland Emmerich's had Independence Day, the sequel coming up. So
after his masterpiece Stonewall.
Stonewall.
Oh, why did you remind me of that movie? I'm not going to get that movie out of my mind. All right, so London Has Fallen. Jim gave it 2 out of 5 stars, so he really doesn't recommend it. It's not a good movie, but it's a good time. Let's just put it
But it's a loud movie, my gosh.
Yeah. All right. So I do actually recommend it. It's not the best movie in town. But all right, let's move on. Oh, we don't have to move on because that is the last of the five movies that we need to review this week. That's okay. We're going to see a couple movies this week. Wednesday night, you guys are seeing 10 Cloverfield Lane.
No! Don't open that door! They're going to get all of us killed!
Something's coming.
Starring John Goodman, and who else is in that movie?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Yes, and a young actor I'm not familiar with.
Paramount's saying it's not a sequel. It's kind of in the same world.
They're keeping it a big secret. Oh. People keep coming up to me and asking me, is this a sequel to Cloverfield? Is that monster coming back?
There was a great article in Entertainment Weekly last week about how J.J. Abrams was able to keep this under wraps.
He did a great job with that, too.
That trailer appeared out of nowhere.
They just sent the production notes, and I'm just a little hesitant to read it because
Might give too much away. Yeah.
But the screenplay is also by Damien Chazelle, who we've talked about, who did last year's Whiplash. Yeah. So that bodes well.
Yeah. Okay, who's reviewing that?
Sounds like I probably will. I think you will.
Okay, so look for Jim's review of 10 Cloverfield Lane Thursday night at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. And then that same night, I can't go to that screening because I get to see Miracles from Heaven, which stars, I think, Jennifer Garner.
And Queen Latifah.
And it looks like the trailer tells the whole plot. It looks like it's about a mom and her young daughter has cancer or some sort of disease. And they're sitting in a tree one day, and the branch breaks, and they fall 30 feet, and all of a sudden her disease goes away, so everybody thanks Jesus. I don't know. I'll be reviewing that, I think.
Well, Sony has two faith-based movies between Risen, doing pretty well, and this film.
Okay, so we'll see. I'll call it as I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'll open along with Knight of Cups and Embrace the Serpent, and I think one other film I'm not so certain of, so... All right. But you may see that there was a horror film that snuck in this weekend you might see, right?
What'd you say there was?
The Other Side of the Door.
Okay, that's playing at the Ronnies. I've never heard of that. Sounds like Beyond the Door with Juliette Mills.
No. It was Sarah Wayne Callis from The Walking Dead and Jeremy Sisco.
Okay, there you go.
But it's R-rated, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, okay. I'll look into it. All right, let's talk about a few things going on here in St. Louis. Let's see. I did my 16mm night last week. Jim was there. I showed Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Dillinger. Boy, that printed Dillinger looked awfully good.
Oh, boy, yeah. It's 73 that Dillinger came 70, out?
Hmm. Yeah, 73. That was great. I loved Harry Dean Stanton's death scene. He goes, I've been shot. Get me a doctor. And then, like, there's this bird's eye view of, like, 20 guys surrounding him with shotguns, and they all shoot him at the same time.
Today ain't going well for me. Yeah. That was his line.
That's a great movie. I love that movie. And then next month, April 5th, I'll be showing The Mighty Peking Man, which is a hilarious Chinese King Kong knockoff with a beautiful Swedish blonde actress in it named Evelyn Kraft in her fur bikini, and Dirty Harry starring Clint Eastwood.
The Don Siegel classic. Yes.
Which date?
Tuesday, April 5th at the Way Out Club starting at 8 o'clock. And that is free, although it is a fundraiser for the National Children's Cancer Society. This weekend, it's a bunch of stuff going on this weekend. Oh, my gosh, the return of Late Night Grindhouse. They've moved it over to the Moolah, and they are kicking off the new venue with a screening of Videodrome. Videodrome is a great David Cronenberg movie from about 1988, maybe.
And it is this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's maybe 82 or 83.
Is it earlier?
I think it's early.
Okay, you're
probably right. We'll have to look that up.
We'll look that up. Michelle, look that up. When was Videodrome made? So that's at midnight, Friday and Saturday, over at the Moolah. So
may have to try Friday night.
I'll be there Friday night.
You will?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, best of luck to Andy with that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The Classic French Film Festival continues this weekend. That's something that the guys over at Cinema St. Louis do. And Friday night is Hate. Have you ever seen Hate?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's really good. It's got Vincent Cassel, a young Vincent Cassel, and he plays this skinhead in France who just hates everybody. So it's all about race relations and hate in France, and that is at 7:30. And that's over at the Winifred Moore Auditorium on the campus of Webster University. And it'll be introduced by our colleague, Calvin Wilson, who I'm sure will have all sorts of interesting things to say about Hate. Saturday night is Spectre. No, it's called Out One Spectre. I'm completely unfamiliar with this movie, we'll be introduced by our colleague Robert Hunt, and it lasts 4.5 hours.
Mm.
I won't be there. And then Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock is La Cage aux Folles, and that is a groundbreaking comedy about a gay couple from 1978. It was remade with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane. Was that his partner?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the Birdcage.
Yeah, Mike Nichols, I think, directed that.
Yes,
the remake.
Right.
I've never seen the original La Cage aux Folles of you, Jim.
Oh,
no,
you
I have
not.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Michelle's fabulous.
Okay.
And our
fabulous, huh?
Oh,
it looks really fabulous.
I'm so glad Kate Markey,
who's one of our contributing writers, will be introducing
it. It's really funny.
That's a Sunday, March 13th at 4 o'clock. All right. Let's talk about one of our favorite actors who passed away. Doggone it. Just a couple years ago, I was watching Creepshow 2, and there was George Kennedy. And I remember thinking, I was just laying there watching, I remember thinking, oh, George Kennedy, I really like him. And I think, I wonder when he died. I haven't seen him in a while. And then I think, maybe he didn't die. And I looked him up, and he was still alive. And I go, that's kind of cool. I hadn't seen him. I just figured he kind of retired, kind of like Sean Connery. Or maybe, I thought maybe he had Alzheimer's or something and couldn't work anymore. Then about a year after that, here I go. I see Mark Wahlberg in The Gambler. And sure enough, who plays his grandpa in that opening scene? George Kennedy. I was so thrilled to see him on the big screen again, because I always liked George Kennedy. So this takes us up to this year. Last Sunday night was the Oscars. I hosted over at the Tivoli. I got home about midnight, and I had just scored the Spartacus Blu-ray. So I put that in at midnight and stayed up till 3 a.m. watching Spartacus. And sure enough, in the very, very famous scene where all the soldiers stand up and say, I'm Spartacus, most famous scene from that movie.
I'm Spartacus!
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 Who's there in his movie debut saying, I am Spartacus?
Yep.
None other than George Kennedy. I thought, that's cool. There's George Kennedy again. I get up the next morning, get on my computer, and I find out that George Kennedy has died.
Yeah.
George Kennedy died last Monday at age 91.
Day after the Oscars.
What a career.
What a career.
Yeah, you know who's somewhat responsible for his career is comedian Phil Silvers.
That's right. He was the military consultant on the Phil Silvers show because George Kennedy had served in World War II.
Yeah, and they said, let's throw this guy a few extra bucks and make him an extra in it. So he was, if you see a military policeman on the Sergeant Bilko show, it's usually George Kennedy.
Yeah.
And that sort of ignited the acting bug in him, and he decided to not be be a career military person, and then get into acting.
Oh, one of my favorites. And then I think Charade was probably his first substantial big screen role. That was in '63.
Oh yeah, lots of TV in there.
Lots
early
of
days.
TV. Oh, yeah, man. I was a little surprised how much TV he did. He was 6'4", so he usually played heavies in these TV roles.
Yeah, Charade. Yeah. And then he followed up Charade with one of your favorites, Straitjacket.
Oh yeah, I've shown that as Super 8 Movie Madness a few times. Can you see my cut? What's weird about that Super 8 cut is it's about an 18-minute condensed version, but almost all of George Kennedy's scenes make it in there, but sometimes they would add narration to the Super 8s, and in that particular one, the narrator says, and here's the handyman on the farm, played by future Oscar winner George Kennedy, which is kind of weird. It kind of takes you out of the film
That's true.
But he gets decapitated by Joan Crawford in that film.
Yeah, and he followed that up with Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. So
yeah, another crazy old lady movie. He was battling all the crazy old women in those days.
Yeah,
Mirage, In Harm's Way, Sons of Katie Elder, Flight of the Phoenix with Jimmy Stewart.
Shenandoah?
That's a classic.
Yeah.
Hurry, Sundown, The Dirty Dozen.
Oh, my gosh.
In fact, and that takes us to 1967 when he won his Oscar for playing Dragline in Cool Hand Luke. If you go to YouTube, you can actually see the Oscar ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that? Patty Duke presented it. She had won Supporting Actress, I guess, 5 years earlier.
Yeah, Ampus has it up on their YouTube site.
It's pretty neat. He was up against John Cassavetes, who was also for The Dirty Dozen, his co-star in The Dirty Dozen, and he was up against Gene Hackman and Michael Pollard for Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, wow.
I wonder if Kennedy was a surprise winner that year. It almost seems like Hackman would have been in the front runner.
Yeah, I
suspect. But George Kennedy came and gave an incredibly short speech. He goes, this is the greatest day of my life. Thank you very much. That's all he said. I watched it last night on YouTube.
But yeah, he's been in some classic films.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh.
He was in all four airport movies as Joe Petroni.
Joe Petroni.
Is there any chance that the plane could stand the explosion?
Well, we got one break. He's not sitting in an aisle seat. So, first, it'll blow out a hunk of the fuselage right here.
And what kind of structural damage would that cause?
Luckily, there's nothing but skin on the sides. All the control cables run along here, so it's not too big a hole. She might still fly. But the sudden decompression at 30,000 feet is something you got to see to believe.
Oh, my gosh. That is my favorite.
Yeah.
With the cigar hanging out.
Oh, yeah. And I guess, well, after doing some more TV, he kind of came back to the big screen when they decided to bring the Police Squad TV series to the movies. And he was now Leslie Nielsen's partner, Ed, in the, what was it, three or four Naked
Three,
films.
Yeah.
Hey, I remember this pug. Ex-boxer. His real name was Joey Chicago.
Oh, yeah. He fought under the name of Kid Minneapolis.
Hey, I saw Kid Minneapolis fight once in Cincinnati.
No, you're thinking of Kid New York. He fought out of Philly.
He was killed in the ring in Houston by Tex Colorado. You know, the Arizona assassin.
Yeah, from Dakota. I don't remember if it was north or south.
North. South Dakota was his brother from West Virginia.
You sure know your boxing?
Well, all I know is never bet on the white guy.
Naked Gun films.
Yeah, and he co-starred with Clint Eastwood a couple of times. He was great in Thunderball and Lightfoot, which I just watched recently.
Yeah.
The Eiger Sanction, also with Clint Eastwood. Just one great movie after another. Great actor. He was part of this sort of, you know, very masculine group of actors that made their names in the 60s and 70s, who are just the core of my very favorite actors. You know, Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson and Lee Marvin. He, you know, he's up there with those guys. We still have Clint is still alive. He's still with us. And so is Bert. But
well, we were remarking
these guys
that,
are all dying off.
Yeah, we were remarking that he actually joined the Dallas TV show near the end of its run. And then just about 5 or 6 years ago, he was on the Young and the Restless soap opera.
Huh.
So the guy was working till the end.
Which surprised me. Because I don't watch TV, and I hadn't seen him until...
Until The Gambler.
Until The Gambler, yes. R.I.P. The one and only George Kennedy. He will be missed. Also, Nancy Reagan died yesterday.
She did.
Or Nancy Davis, as she was known. And she was a movie star as well, although I looked at her filmography. And the only movie I'd seen her in was Donovan's Brain. That was the only cult movie she kind of starred in, which is kind of a fun science fiction movie. She was really known more as being the wife of President Ronald Reagan, who I have seen a lot of President Ronald Reagan's movies.
Yeah, well, they co-starred in Hellcats of the Navy. We can't forget that. And she was had a big part in an MGM thriller fantasy film called The Next Voice You Hear with James Whitmore, which is interesting. People waiting to hear the voice of God over the radio. Interesting career.
Oh, yeah, yeah. R.I.P. Nancy Reagan and R.I.P. George Kennedy. Okay, our friend Anina Christensen is here. We like Anina. She works here in this building, the On STL studio, which is where we record our We Are Movie Geeks podcast every Monday morning. And sometimes Anina even lets us in the building.
Woo!
You were so cool. And Anina got to attend the True False Film Festival over the weekend. How many years have you been having this thing, do you know?
14 years,
14
actually.
14 years.
Yes.
It started out kind of small, and now it's turned into this big hipster event where people come from all over the country. All over the world. And I've never been. It's a documentary film festival. Tell us about the True False Film Festival this year. Is this the first year you've gone?
This is the first year I have gone. And I went because I've heard such good things from people all over the country about it. Mm-hmm. And it's right here in Missouri, you know,
it's
2 hours
Columbia,
from St.
Missouri,
Louis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, it was the most wonderful film viewing experience I have ever had.
Really?
I had the best time. Yeah, there was not one moment that I was wishing, you know, like sometimes I'll be in a movie and I'm like, oh, like kind of bored thinking about other stuff. Not one moment I was thinking about something else. It was so interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where do they show the movies there in Columbia? Is there like several movie theaters? Or they show them on the campus?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, counting here. There's like 10 or 11 different venues.
Yeah.
It's throughout downtown in the campus.
Okay, on the campus. That makes sense.
Yeah, and the festival itself is also really great because it's a festival. I mean, it's a whole big, it involves the whole community. All the stores have discounts and special menus for the festival goers because you have to eat quickly. And there's art pieces, installations throughout the city, different other experiences. Like we did a virtual reality thing that was set up. And there was a big camera obscura set up on the street. And just, you know, it's all a big thing. Whereas the International Film Festival here in St. Louis is kind of more all over the city and you just go see movies and maybe there's a party.
Yeah, is this just a one weekend thing?
Yeah, it's Thursday through Sunday.
It's more condensed than SLIF. And where did you stay in Columbia?
With my brother, who goes to Mizzou.
Oh,
slept on an air mattress on his floor.
Okay, I went to Mizzou, and I used to go to the Missouri Theater, which is right there.
Yeah. And well, they definitely have movies in there.
That's a huge theater, a nice old theater.
Oh yeah,
I saw Motel Hell there in 1980.
Nice. Awesome.
So tell us about some of the films you saw at True False Film Festival.
Well, yes. There are so many great ones. So I think one of my favorites was Tickled.
Tickled.
Yes. It's the story about competitive endurance tickling.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, what? And this guy is this reporter who just, he's from New Zealand. He does mostly odd stories like this, reporting stories. And he happened upon this on YouTube and started to delve into it. And it opened up this huge can of worms and lawsuits.
Tickling.
Yes.
That'll be an Olympic event pretty soon.
Yeah, well, no, because it's all this like huge thing. I don't want to ruin the story, but it's this company that like contacted him, was threatening him, and personal attacks and all these lawsuits. He's gotten like millions of lawsuits over this.
Really?
It's this, yeah, this crazy big fetish thing that like weird. Yeah, and a whole backstory with this guy in the 90s who put this guy in jail and all these things. And it's really interesting. And you just think, wow, this is all happening in America. And all this infrastructure and stuff for these tickling competitions for this one person who's paying for it all. And it's just so amazing. This
sounds
kind of
creepy.
It is a little creepy. Yeah, it was definitely creepy. Yeah. Definitely. And the movie director, when he was there that day, earlier that day, he... someone approached him and said, oh, are you David? And he was like, oh my gosh, it's happening, a fan. And he said, yeah, I'm David. And they said, you got served. And he got papers that day. So yeah.
I thought you were going to say somebody ran up and tickled him.
Oh, no. He gets tickled all the time. Yeah.
So he got served with papers. Yeah. An indictment of some kind. Okay.
It's just, it's a crazy story.
What theater was that at? Was that at the Missouri?
What theater is that? That was in the Jesse, which is
Jesse Auditorium?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I used to see a lot of movies back there when I was in college. 16mm. Prince.
Mm-hmm.
I used to project. Nice. I was actually in the film committee and I was a projectionist.
Nice.
I mean, everything was on 16 back in those days. What else did you see, Anina?
Sonita was also one of my favorites.
Nita?
Sonita.
Sonita. What's that about?
It's about a girl. She is originally from Afghanistan, but her family escaped to Iran. And she's a rapper. Yeah, it's so great. She, in Iran, it's actually illegal for women in Afghanistan to sing or dance. So they also were not cool with this. But she's very determined. And she's I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to do it. And her mom came to Iran from Afghanistan to come bring her back to sell her off for marriage. Because that's still a tradition in Afghanistan, but not Iran. I learned a lot about these two countries during this film festival. And she, obviously doesn't want to do that. And it's a really interesting documentary also because the actual filmmakers get involved with the process of the movie.
Yeah.
They decide to pay $2,000 to keep her still there for 6 months in
Iran. But do they tickle her?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. Okay. But so they pay this money to the mom to like keep her off for a little bit. She needed the money from the sale of the marriage. Mm-hmm. And then during that time, they make a video for her on the film camera that they're using to film the documentary. Put it on YouTube. She gets entered in this contest where she wins Best Rapper and Best Female Rapper. And now she got recruited by this school in Utah where she's going for music school. And it was this whole, she had to get papers from Afghanistan and go back where the Taliban is. Oh. And she, like, if she couldn't get her papers, she would have been stuck in Afghanistan with the Taliban and her mom trying to sell her off.
It sounds like a subplot of Rock the Casbah, where the young woman was on the American Idol, in the Afghanistani version of the American Idol, when they couldn't have women singing, and one gal, and which was based on a true story. But it sounds like a different true story. But
yeah,
it sounds
definitely
similar.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But the best part is at the end, she was there.
Oh, yeah, she was there.
She showed up and she rapped. Yeah. And we were like, oh my God, it's this girl. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Did you take her out drinking in Columbia?
No. She's determined, to make her dream come true. She's a great girl. Yeah.
Okay.
She's only 20, I think, now.
Okay.
19 or 20.
Before you get to the next film, what was the nightlife like there at the True False Film Festival in Columbia? Did everybody go out drinking and partying after the movies? And
yeah, they have big parties for the actual, film festival goers, but you have to have either one of the $200 or up passes, and I only pay for the simple pass, so I did not pay $200.
Didn't try crashing?
No. I was tired. I'm kind of sick, so I went to bed. But, yeah, I mean, they have bars down there, all the college kids and stuff, so.
I used to work at Harpo's.
Oh, nice. We walked by there a lot of times.
I was a doorman.
I was going to ask you were the bouncer there.
I was a doorman. I checked IDs. The bouncer was a different job.
I should have gone. I'm like, I knew Tom Stockman.
Right? Oh, yeah. 1983. All right. What else did you see, Anina?
Yeah, let's see here. Oh, another one I like. Norman Lear, Just Another Version of You. You guys probably know Norman Lear.
Was Norman Lear there?
No.
He's got to be not 90.
He's 93 now. Yeah, and he's working on a new TV series, actually. Oh, yeah. I do not know who Norman Lear was until this movie. So
that hurts me.
Sorry.
I'm so old.
It was a very interesting biopic, and really, you know, a great, formidable man, you know, good spirit.
Yeah, 45 years ago, he was television, man.
Yeah. He was very TV pioneer, really? Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, The Fear of 13. This one's crazy, too. Everything is just amazing. The Fear of 13 is about this guy who went to jail for a crime. He was on death row for a murder he did not commit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was back in like this, yeah. A lot of them are. In like the 70s or 80s. And so there really wasn't, you know, DNA evidence or anything. And it's just his story. And it's just up and down and up and down, you know. And when they come out with DNA testing, he's like, guys, we can find out I'm innocent. And so he sends it to his attorney. And they're like, yeah, we can do it. And then, oh, but they threw away the evidence. And you're like, what?
Oh, damn,
and
I hate
then,
when that happens.
Yeah, right? And he thinks, he's like, oh, what about, you know, this? And his mom finds the clothes from the trial, and the janitor had them just in his room, and then they ship him off to this guy to test, and that like breaks open during shipping and it ruins the DNA evidence, and you're like, are you serious? And just every single thing, you're like, oh my god, this poor guy. But and it's just kind of about prison life. And
so where's the guy now? Did he show up? Or is he still in prison?
He got out of prison. He lives in Europe now.
Oh, he didn't come to the he didn't come to True or False?
He did not. It was mostly the directors and the producers and things.
How many movies did you end up seeing there, Anita?
Well, we saw 10, and then we also went to a campfire story session, which is just a little, it looked like a campfire, actually. They had a little fire in the middle and stuff, and stars projected, and it was the movie tellers telling stories from either their movie or past movies, so I consider that an extra thing.
And that was outside?
No, it was in a building.
Oh, okay.
They had, like, projections, yeah. Oh. And then we did extra things, like the virtual reality
experience.
You said
campfire. I'm like, I'm everybody's sitting around the campfire
cold.
Talking about their film.
A fake fire, yeah.
Well, tell us about another film you saw. You saw 10.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, if you saw 10 documentaries and didn't nod off during any of them, that says a lot about this festival.
She didn't say she didn't nod off.
I did not nod
off. You're putting words in her mouth.
Oh, well, she said she enjoyed all of them.
I was amazed.
The ones that I don't enjoy, I nod off during.
Oh, yeah.
I know, because, yeah, usually, you know, I mean, it's like a hit and miss at festival. Sometimes you like movies, sometimes you don't. But no, every single thing was just so amazing. Though another one, The Land of the Enlightened, it was about another in Afghanistan, learn more about Afghanistan, this band of boys, the oldest one was probably 9 or 10. He was the leader. We never really understood whether they were part of the Taliban or just their own fending for themselves band of boys. But they would hang out, you know, in the desert mountain regions. And they were part of the lapis lazuli trade and the opium trade. Mm-hmm. And they would rob, you know, caravans they saw of camels going across the border and rob them and take all their things. And the reasoning, I mean, most of the kids would do the opium once they stole it. But the main guy was stealing it because he wanted to collect it all for a dowry for this girl he wanted to marry. He was going to give it to his dad, or excuse me, the girl's dad. And the girl is like 6 years old, and it's cute. He goes up to her, and he like gives her this pin, and he's like, this is the plan, you know. I'm going to go get all this stuff, and I'm going to give it to your dad. I'm going to tell him to marry you, and I'm going to take over this land, and we're going to have a castle and all these things. Yeah. And she's just like, yeah, okay. Like, she doesn't even talk. She just looks up, you know, this little 6-year-old washing their dishes and cooking for them. And
then he tickled her.
So cute.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up here pretty soon. What was your favorite of all the movies you saw up there in True or False?
Hard
you had to pick
decide.
One.
I think Sonito is my absolute favorite.
Do you think you might go again next year, Anita?
Yes,
it's
think
be
so.
An annual thing for you?
It might be, yes. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I will. And also, all of the movies from past years, I'm pretty sure all of them, are available online.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to go watch them all.
So
14
to, like,
years
like,
of movies.
TrueFalls.com or something? And
yeah, there, I think maybe .org. It's on their website. Yeah, definitely.
Good. Well, I'm glad you went.
Wonderful. Me too.
I've heard about this thing. And I know, you know, Michael Hefner, who's one of our contributing writers, it was down there too. I know a bunch of people that went. But
yeah, we met a lot of people from St. Louis.
Did you? Okay, well, good. Well, thanks a lot for coming in and talking about it.
Yeah, thank
and next
you.
Next year, we'll do this annually. We'll have you in here every
year
to talk about the True False.
You should go next year too.
yeah, I don't know. We'll see. All right, so we've got to wrap this up, though. Next week, we'll be back. We're going to review the one with Jennifer Garner, what's it called? Miracles from Heaven.
Oh,
we're
going
to review Cloverfield Lane, and we'll probably review a couple other things, and who knows what we're going to talk about, but it'll be about movies, that's for sure. But for now, we got to sign off. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Thanks again, Anita, for joining us, and listen to us again next week.
Black leather, rock, ta-ta-ta. Black leather.
Hello, Don.
Hey.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.
kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, play me the rock. Black leather, black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle there, chaps.
Oh, I got some.